Hi, I'm Mess, and I'm here with my lovely co-host, Orion, and you're listening to Season 4 of the Iterators of the Imperium podcast, the podcast in which Ryan is the expert on Warhammer 40k, and I am the noob, trying to learn about the Warhammer universe. So let's just get right into it, Ryan. You take the wheel.
Jesus, take the wheel.
If only, oh, God, right? I'm going to need it. I'm going to need it for this word.
See, I like that you've learned to dread this like you did with the quotes.
Yes, exactly. For the people who doesn't know the gist of this, oh well, the gimmick we have for this particular season, like we're still in the beginning of the season. I can say this.
Yeah.
Is Ryan's gonna mention a word that correlates to something later on in the episode, but I don't know what is coming for first off. And I probably, most likely, most definitely doesn't know what the word means. But I'm going to have a guess to see if I can bullshit my way out of... Oh, well, actually just come up with a different type of explanation to what the word is. So, Ryan, yeah. what is the word? Give it to me.
So, right. I actually changed this, interestingly. When I started doing notes, the word that immediately came to mind was cacophony. Right, that was going to be your word. And then it occurred to me that I think I actually have told you about that too much.
Yeah?
Right, you with me so far? So I was like, I should probably go for something a bit more out there, you know? So actually, I decided that today I wanted you to tell me what Canticle City is.
The Canticle City?
Yes.
Bro, Warhammer is so freaking big. The thing is, I have heard this before.
You have?
But I am blank.
Do you remember when you heard it?
See, no, that's the thing. I don't know.
You heard it in season one, around episode 11, I think, which was the Black Legion. But when we looked at it there, we didn't look at it in the way we're going to this time. We looked at it from the Black Legion's point of view, which is interesting.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
But can you mention it again? What is it?
What do you want?
Just a word. I got a bullshit
Canticle
my way.
I got
the Canticle City.
Yes.
Essentially, it's a big refugee camp.
Right.
Where people, I don't know who, seek refuge. It's some place. Oh, I could have done some stuff with the warp.
Oh.
I don't know if I'm onto the thing because I'm trying to bullshit a way out of it. Maybe hit the sweet spot. Like a hidden thing in the warp that only a certain group can find, seek refuge.
No, but I get what you're driving at. You're thinking down the lines of, like, the Dark Eldar city.
Yes. Right?
Like the Drukhari city in the Webway, yeah. I get where you're going with it. That is not the correct path to follow, I guess.
I think we both saw that coming.
Yeah, you know what, right? Remember in the Imperial Fist episode, we mentioned the Iron Cage?
Yes.
Yeah, think more down that line.
Right, can you just give us an answer? Otherwise, people are going to they're gonna be sitting here for a long time.
Okay.
It's fine.
I'll put you in your misery. We'll move on.
No, don't tell me. It's coming later on in the episode. It's coming later on.
Yes, it will be talked about later on. Would you like to do Kakoff and I instead? You have a better chance
for that. No, it's fine. It's fine. But it will come later on, guys, in the episode. So don't go anywhere. We got to get the retention up, Ryan.
That's it. So
you
today
too.
Algorithm. Woo.
Algorithms. Let's go.
Today we are going to be talking about the Emperor's Children. Fulgrim's Fun Boys.
Okay.
So, I've mentioned this in the past, but there's typically, like, only a couple of, you know, main characters or, like, features of the Legion or whatever that we have to discuss to be able to, like, move forward into the modern day without you being totally lost, right? So, like, with A Thousand Suns, it was Ahriman was the most important part because he's the most prevalent part in the modern day. But also, you do kind of need to know about the rubric, stuff like that. So, the Chaos Legions typically follow that kind of path where there's, like, a couple of main characters that you really need to know about. And then, like, some info about the Legion in particular, about how they work nowadays, right? So, in this case, there are a couple of characters that we need to go over. So, today's episode is primarily going to focus around these two characters, which are the Legion's head apothecary, Fabius Bile, who we have mentioned. I've got a picture of him somewhere. This dude.
Yeah.
And we're also going to be looking at the 13th Company captain, Lucius.
Look at him.
Yes.
Look at him.
He's a very handsome man. A lot less handsome after Gavial Loken got done with him, but you know. That's a discussion point for later.
Great.
Yeah. So, it's these, the boys in purple and gold. The only legion allowed to wear the Emperor's symbol on their armor. These are the guys we're going to talk about, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, we all know, led by Fulgrim, the handsomest man in the galaxy at this point. I don't know if I can call a demon handsome, but he might still be handsome. I don't know. So by the time we get to the end of the Heresy, the Legion is left in a pretty odd state, right? They've got some weird assets, right? Because you know how you could sum up most of the Legions by, like, the number of troops and, like, the specialized equipment and, like, what they're good at and stuff like that. With these guys, by the end of the Heresy, they had a Primarch with four arms and no legs. They had an entire Legion obsessed with sensation and excess and debauchery. They had a Lieutenant Commander Apothecary who has the goal of saving all of humanity and denies that gods exist, even though his Primarch is half snake. It's not exactly like you can look at these guys and go, I can kind of see how you ended up where you are. It's no surprise that everything about this Legion is kind of a shit show nowadays. Like, I'll tell you what, great storylines, right? Fabius is one of my favorite characters in the modern, like, novels and stuff like that, right? But it's all just total anarchy. There is no reasoning behind it. It's just anarchy, carnage, top to bottom. Fire and explosions, and that's it.
That's just we like it.
Exactly. These guys, I feel like, sum up 40K pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah, actually.
Everyone thinks they're the hero that's going to save the galaxy, and in the end, most of what they do is just set it on fire more.
Yes.
40K, woo!
Really. It really is.
Yeah. So,
Tales of Survival, Ryan. Tales of Survival.
You're not really wrong. Is. Yeah. So, as you can imagine, total shambles after the Heresy. So,
yep.
As we mentioned in the past, after the Heresy, all of the traitor legions were, like, pushed back gradually into the Eye of Terror, right? This rapidly led to this legion, kind of led to all of them doing this, but this one in particular, because what we're talking about today, split up into, like, a huge number of, like, scattered war bands. So, like, little tiny armies rather than one big cohesive group, right?
Mm-hmm.
With basically every one of them had their own individual leadership, and it just became all-out carnage. And it was caused primarily because, well, one, their leader has become half snake, so that was an issue. Kind of throws a wrench in the works. But then you've also got, with being in the Eye of Terror, and now the Legion obviously worships Slaanesh, everyone in the Legion is falling more and more into their, like, desires, right? Into excess, as is Slaanesh's whole thing. So that leads to causing, like, splits in the Legion between the groups that want to pursue certain types of excess, or groups that have decided one particular way of doing that is wrong and will exile anyone that wants to do it that way and things like that. So you end up with this massive legion of incredible space marines splitting up and all gathering into little tiny groups to fight amongst themselves. Which is total carnage, basically. These guys were like a serious issue within the Eye of Terror, right? Among all the Chaos Legions, these guys might have done the most harm to Chaos Legions. Like, they were pretty bad.
Yeah.
So, Fulgrim at this point, like, once this all starts happening, just leaves. He just goes into the warp and starts partying in Slaanesh's little pocket realm of the warp forever. Like, Fulgrim is just gone, right? He's like, I'll be back in like half an hour. I'm going to go get some milk, and just never came back.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, he did the dead trick, you know. I'm going to go out for some milk.
Just peaced out.
Did a Houdini, right?
Might see me in like 8,000 years. Right? He was out. Then you've got Chief Apothecary Fabius Bile, who just keeps doing his experiments and everything like that, which this dude obviously encouraged to begin with, and has led him down the line of like gene manipulation and cloning to try and develop like new soldiers and stuff, because he wants to save the galaxy. And that is kind of the given state of the Emperor's Children for a huge amount of time, right? Is that it's just scattered warbands of carnage, Fulgrim's gone, and Fabius is rocking around trying to, like, invent new humans to just take over because we suck. He basically decides that rather than trying to kill all the bad things in the galaxy, we need to make humanity stronger to survive them in the first place. So he just starts working on that.
Yeah, Darwin's theory, you know?
Aye, kind of he's vibes. Just, like, giving it a helping hand.
Yeah.
Survival of the fittest, bitch. So, yeah, that's the general state of them for, like, the majority of the time between, like, 30,000 and 40,000, right?
Yeah.
There are major events that go on that they, like, poke their heads out and do some stuff, but if someone's like, what are the Emperor's Children doing in the year 35,000? You could probably hazard a guess. Fulgrim's partying in Slaanesh's realm. The rest of them are all fighting amongst themselves. And Fabius is experimenting on things. That's the gist, right?
At least they keep themselves busy, Ryan.
You know what? You're not wrong, right? These guys cannot sit still for 5 minutes. They are active.
They like are a active bunch of ADHD kids just running around. You know, at least they're entertaining themselves.
That's it. Fine. Just causing problems for everyone else in the interim.
That's fine.
Yeah. Sure. So, as I mentioned, there are a few kind of major events worth discussing, right? One of them comes quite early on, and this is the Battle for Harmony, right? Or Catnical City. Here we go. Right.
Okay, now it gets, retention algorithm. Let's go.
Yes, here we go. Right, we're getting into it. So, this is one whole weird event. But we have mentioned it back in season one with the Black Legion, right? But we're going to kind of go at it from a slightly different point of view this time. Because then we were kind of just going over it to explain what the Black Legion were and stuff like that. This is more of a Emperor's Children side of the story.
Okay.
Yeah. So Harmony was a world within the Eye of Terror, right? And it kind of became like a safe haven for the Emperor's Children. So there was a huge bulk of Emperor's Children there. There was also a lot of, like, the Mechanicus that had turned evil were also living there, weirdly. But this whole world became, like, a safe haven for this Legion and some of their allies within the Eye of Terror. So those that weren't in the scattered warbands basically just lived here. And this included a lot of, like, the higher-ups of the Legion, like Eidolon, I believe. Eidolon, Fabius, and there's a few other, I think Sirius was there as well. Either way, there's a bunch of like the actual high-ranking members of the Legion back in the day are using this place as like their base, right?
Yeah.
And this is where we come to Mechanical City, which at the time was this massive fortress, right? It was a fortress city, basically, purely for the Emperor's Children. And they were trying to like use it as a way to rebuild, I guess, or to maintain some form of cohesion as a Legion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the kind of the high-ranking members had stayed there, because they were still pretending they were in charge of something. So you had guys like Fabius Bile, obviously he was the chief apothecary and stuff like that, who lived there, basically. And right, it's important for me to mention this, right? At this point in time, because it changes a lot, at this point in time, Fabius believes that he should fix everything, right? He needs to fix the galaxy back to the way it was, right? Because he believes that they fucked up, right? That, like, the traitors were the problem. But not because they were traitors. He believes that they were the problem because they lost the fight.
Right?
So he is convinced that Horus's failure was the issue. If Horus had just been more of a man, it would have been fine. That is the whole thing. Right?
Yeah.
So this is the state of like what's going on Harmony, right? Fortress World. A lot of Emperor's children, Fabius is there, and currently thinks Horus is the problem, even though Horus is very dead.
Yeah.
Now, at the same time, the remains of the Sons of Horus, Horus's legion, were scattered and leaderless, right? They were also just in these random warbands, right? Just trying to live, basically, with no one in charge at all. And the Emperor's children decided that they would use this to their advantage, and they attacked the Sons of Horus base on a planet called Malion, right? So Sons of Horus had a little shrine world fortress thing going on, right? And the whole reason they had it was because they still had the body of Horus, because they didn't, like, the Emperor never destroyed his body. He just, like,
I know. Yeah.
Destroyed his soul.
Yeah.
So they still had his body. So they went to Malium and built this little like fortress shrine, and then put Horus's body in it with his mace, a Worldbreaker, Worldshatterer, whatever. So the Emperor's children take the advantage and ransack this place and steal Horus's body.
It's really disgusting when you think about it.
Yeah.
It's like
moldering corpse in armor.
It's like, I know you want to get a clone at some point, like he gets cloned and stuff, but really, Horus has seen some shit through his time, man. Even in death. Like, he's actually crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, that's a solid point. Like, if you want to think about which Primarch has been through the worst, right? Most people would immediately think, like, their childhood and start comparing, like, Mortarion growing up in, like, the Poison Planet or, like, Ross running around with wolves and stuff like that. But you're like, hold on, what after they died? Because this guy's been through the worst.
Like, you really, when never you think got about it. Bro, just disgracing his body by, like, nah. Yeah.
This guy got kidnapped after he died. What kind of insult is that?
They peed on him. Allegedly.
Probably. Look, I would say that's excessive, and that sounds like it's right up their alley.
Probably.
This is why you don't let John be on guard. Don't think like that.
Ah, not John again, right? He was here last time as well.
He was. John has decided to go with excessively stupid rather than anything else.
Yeah.
Much to everyone else's dismay. Anyway. Moving on. So they ransack the place and steal Horus's body, right?
As you do, yeah.
Yes. And then you get these rumors floating around that Fabius is going to use it to make a clone of Horus.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
We've all heard this story before, right?
Yes.
We're flogging a dead horse at this point. We've told this story before.
Yeah.
Right? Now, of course, we have like the kind of initials, or right. This rumor is what causes the Battle of Harmony, right?
Okay.
This rumor is what starts off. So at this point, Abaddon decides he's going to take charge, right? He will not let this insult stand of stealing Horus's body. So this is when he forms the Black Legion and decides, we're going to go kick some ass at Canticle City and get our dad's body back. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So he actually doesn't round up very many people to begin with, but one of the main people he like rounds up to join him is a Thousand Sun Psyker, right? And the reason this guy's important is because he has his own massive warship, right? Which doesn't have a crew. It is controlled by like a series of brains in jars that has like this weird name. But basically, all of these like minds work together to control the ship's systems on like an automated loop kind of thing. So he can give it commands using his psychic powers as like telepathy, and then it will carry it out, rather than needing an actual full crew to run the ship.
Have we not talked about this before?
I think we've mentioned it, probably back when we discussed this in Season 1. because we discussed it from Emperor from the Black Legion side, so we would have focused on these details quite heavily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I've made like an AI joke back in the day with this, you know?
Yeah. Well, this That's is right magical AI. This is magical, terrible quality AI.
This is not ChatGPT-3, it's ChatGPT-4.
Yes.
Plus.
Yes. It can control spaceships at that point. That's what the plus does.
Yes.
Yes. Still can't write anything convincingly, though. Anyway, moving on. So, the main players on the Black Legion side that you need to know about are Abaddon, obviously, Kyle himself, and this random Thousand Sun Psyker, who has his own warship. At this point, Abaddon still has Horus's warship, like his like Legion flagship, which is gigantic. So when the battle kicks off over Harmony, it's these two ships, along with a bunch of other rabble, coming into orbit over the planet, and then getting into like a space battle with the Emperor's Children ships. And because the Vengeful Spirit, Horus's flagship, is on the Black Legion side, they basically just wipe out everyone else because it's gigantic and it is Horus's goddamn flagship. It's basically just guns. It's more guns than it is ship. Right? So they win that fight pretty quickly. And then to add a point of fuck you to it, he has the Psyker send like a collision course order to hit the extra warship they've got, and it just autopilots itself directly into Canticle City from orbit and just wipes the place. It's just flaming rubble left over.
That's a bad day.
Well, not if you're Abaddon. If you're Abaddon, it's probably pretty cool.
In the city.
Yeah, fuck it. Emperor's Children, who cares? They probably loved it.
Fireworks. Yeah, yeah.
They're probably excessively painful. They love that shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's right. They crashed a warship into a fortress from orbit. So, obviously, now you've got Canticle City is like a pile of rubble. But the important thing here is that Abaddon was never after Canticle City. He was after a ship in orbit called the Flesh Market, which is a disgusting name, but it was Fabius Biles' like ship. And that's what he was after. He was after Fabius, but he just wanted to make a point of saying, fuck you to the Emperor's Children. So he crashed a ship into their like fortress.
Yeah, it's a lot of damage. That's a lot of damage.
For literally no reason other than because he could. Just throwing out there.
God.
Yeah. So, as it usually goes, Emperor's Children are scattered and destroyed. Then Abaddon boards the Flesh Market to hunt down Fabius and his dad's corpse. He obviously does this with the newly founded Black Legion, so he has Marines at his back. It's not just Abaddon charging through the place with Horus's claw. Although it wouldn't surprise me if he tried that. Abaddon is a total psycho. He really is. He's a nutcase. Wait till we get to the modern day stuff. You're gonna see.
Alright.
Yeah. So, as he's like charging through Fabius's ship, obviously, he comes upon a bunch of mutants and then these like, you know, biologically enhanced warriors and stuff like that that Bile's been making. And he murders his way through all of them, you know, the usual. It's basically how every story involving Fabius in battle goes. Until he eventually gets to this like central laboratory, right? Fabius's like main lab. And he finds Fabius along with 20 cloning vats, each containing a young clone of each of the 20 Primarchs. My issue with this, right? I have a couple issues with this situation, right? Because this is canon, right? He did clone all of them, right? My issues with this are, one, what about the Alpha Legion Primarch? Because that's two guys, so which one is he cloning? Or is he biologically creating a combination of the two? Because he realistically just doesn't know that there's two of them, right?
Is it that stated anywhere?
No. Because he never really inspects them, he just finds the 20 vats. And I think he notes a couple of them, and he notes the number purely to, like, you know, spike the reader's interest in the fact that he's got the missing ones that we've never heard anything about. but he never explains much more than that. So realistically, there should be 21, but it means he's either cloning Alpharius or Omega, yeah, and he doesn't know which, which is quite funny.
Frustrating.
Quite,
I would say frustrating, because like you say, is it merged together, or like, how would it work?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Because the reason I think possibly a combination of the two is if he's been working with, like, the biological basis that they came from, you would get a combination of the two. Because they were never meant to be twins. They were accidentally twins.
Yeah. You
know? Or you'd probably just end up with, like a brother to them, essentially.
Yeah.
So, Abaddon, after finding these, like, cloning vats, proceeds to destroy them all and kill the clones within them because, you know, fuck that. Also, primarily just to upset Fabius, because how dare you for all of this. So Fabius, being enraged by his work being destroyed, sends in his full-grown clone of Horus to go kick his son's ass. And remember that Abaddon has Horus's claw, right? The talon of Horus, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the body of Horus had Horus's mace with it. So Abaddon is still wielding the claw when they meet, but the clone of Horus has Horus's actual weapon, Worldbreaker, the giant mace.
Yeah.
So it's a weird situation. It's a really creepy situation to think about, because the clone of Horus is, like, really forgetful and, like, it's like he's kind of, like, out of touch. Like, he doesn't know exactly where he is or what's going on. So, like, his mind's not quite right, which is really weird. So he ends up in this big battle with the new Black Legion, kills a bunch of them, and eventually ends up locked weapons with Abaddon, right? So he locks, like, the mace with the claw. And now that they're, like, face-to-face with each other so close, Horus realizes who Abaddon is. And he calls him his son, you know? Perfectly reasonable thing to do. And Abaddon basically just denounces that he's his son and kills him, just impales him with a claw.
Bish.
He's like, it's good to see you again, son. Like, I am no son of yours, Sam. It's really a very touching moment until, like, he gets impaled. So that is actually the point where Abaddon becomes the War Master of Chaos. It's after he kills the clone of Horus that he, like, titles himself as the War Master, like his dad.
Yeah.
And since then, he's just been going around, you know, regrouping Sons of Horus and building up the Black Legion before kicking off the Black Crusades. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about your boy Fabius here. So
Fabius Pyle. Yep.
Yeah. So since that point, he has basically just continued going around the Eye of Terror, offering his, like, cloning and gene manipulation and mutation services, and apothecary services. He will actually just, like, patch up a wound if you want. He is, like, the best apothecary in the galaxy. So if you, like, some of your guys are injured, if you're, like, a minor Chaos Warband leader, and you've got, like, 10, I don't know, World Eaters with, like, limbs ripped off, and he turns up at your door and he's like, I'll make you a deal. You give me some men and I'll, like, work for you for a while. And he's like, they're like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Here's a bunch of human slaves we captured in our last raid. Here's, like, 3,000 of them. Can you, like, fix these 10 guys that are all missing a limb? And he's like, nebah. And he's going there. But the issue is that he then uses their 3,000 random slaves to make a bunch of disgusting mutants and shit like that. And then just, like, here you go. And then just fucks off. He just needs people to work on, so he just goes around offering his services in payment for, like, flesh to work on, basically.
It's really disgusting.
It is, yeah. Yeah. But, to be fair, in the modern day, he has developed his skills so much that he is, like, a master craftsman. He is, like, the, like, you know, apothecary, basically. He's the guy. If you need mutants made, he is your man.
I don't doubt you.
You want to see what he looks like now?
Yes.
Fabius Pyle, Clone Lord.
Bro, I've seen a figurine of this guy.
I have one there.
I think you've shown me. Either you've shown me or I've like Googled it before.
I haven't painted mine. I think you probably Googled it one of the many times we talked about this disgusting freak.
Oh, wow.
I love it, but he's wearing a man-skin coat. It's very hard to defend his moral status when he's wearing a man-leather coat.
Yeah. That's going to be hard to defend.
Yeah. Actually, yeah. They've just released a new book about this guy. It's a book that's about him and Belisarius Call, the guy who made the new type of Space Marines for Gilliman. And it's the two of them meeting, and it's quite cool. But there's a point where they actually do meet and they have a conversation. And there is a point where Fabius says something slightly or kind of, you know, judgmental or whatever. And Belisarius decides to like try and take like, no, sorry. Belisarius says something and Fabius tries to take like the moral high ground over it, claiming that like his work serves a purpose and that like his work, as disgusting as everyone thinks it is going to save humanity. And Call is just like, it's really hard for like the man in the man leather coat to take the moral high ground, isn't it? And you're like, it's a solid fucking point.
Yeah.
Like, I forget sometimes how much of a creep this dude actually is. This rotting carcass of a man walking around.
Just misunderstood, Ryan. I think we said not Fabius Bile, but Fabius Bile.
I'm sure there's a point in, like, there's a trilogy about this guy. I'm sure there's a point in one of it, in one of the books, where he says something and, like, his, like, assistant or whatever that's with him just turns to him and is like, you truly are vile, Fabius. He's like, ha!
Just shrugs it off, like, yeah, thank you.
I've been called worse. It's not even lunch.
He'll take it. He'll take it as a compliment, Ryan. Trust me.
At this point, it's probably yeah. But yeah, that is our boy Fabius, and that's kind of his side of the story. Before we get on to like modern day stuff with him, right? This is where it kind of leaves off. He gets fucked over at Canticle City. His clones get fucked over. And then he decides to just go around and work on his skills and develop his talents. Now we come to our boy Lucius.
Lucius.
This is not a great picture. I'm going to throw it out there. But such is life.
It is what it is.
Yeah. So we're going to start off back in like the 30th millennium, like pre-heresy time for this guy, right? Because we've never actually mentioned him. So I feel like I need to give you the proper rundown on him, right?
Yeah.
He is the 13th company captain of the Emperor's Children. So he leads an actual huge section of the Legion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he is the greatest swordsman in any of the Legions.
Okay.
He is the greatest Space Marine swordsman in the galaxy. Right? So he's a pretty impressive dude. As you can imagine, he is the most arrogant asshole anyone has ever met, and most people hate him because of it. But he is an incredible warrior. Okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. With me so far. Right?
Yes.
He has never actually lost a duel at all until like the first or second book of the Heresy. Until that point. So, whole Great Crusade time, he never once loses a one-on-one duel. That's how good this guy is. When he's
quite badass.
He is a total badass. He's also a total arsehole, but he is really good at what he does. Can never take that away from him. He's just a very unpleasant human being otherwise. His personality is awful, but it's not his personality you want in a battle. So, although he might annoy the enemy to death, to be honest with you. It's a very real risk with this guy. Actually, he is beaten in a duel in, like, the first or second book there. I believe it's the first. So, I'm going to explain this because it's interesting, right? The first three books of the Horus Heresy are told from the point of view of a man named Gavial Loken, right? He's one of Horus's captains. And so it's
the
like...
the name does ring a bell.
Yeah, it's like him watching Horus turn to a traitor, which is quite a dramatic way to do it. I like it. It's good. And early on, they end up working side by side, the Sons of, or the Luna Wolves at the time, and the Emperor's Children. So this guy ends up in one of like the training cages on the same ship that Gavio Loken happens to be on. And they end up in the kind of the training area together as this guy's doing like practice duels. Eventually he harasses Loken into going into like a duel with him. Because he basically is just like goading him on until he agrees to fight him so that he can prove he's better than him. Which is just him being an arrogant arsehole, as we all know. And Loken basically wants nothing to do with it because he doesn't care. And then eventually he's like, you know what, fuck it, fine, fine, whatever will shoot you up, fine, I'll fight you, for the love of God. So the two of them get their swords and they go into the practice cage and then like they ring the bell or whatever. Basically they start the fight and Lucius charges at him with everything he's got, and then right before they like make contact, Loken just sidesteps and just punches him square in the face. And that is the first time Lucius ever lost a duel, and he's like, oh, you cheated, that's not, there was a sword fight. And Loken's like, it's a fight, I won. It's your problem. Oh. Your issue is you thought it was a sword fight.
Yeah.
It's like, you said sword fight. I agreed to nothing. You lost. Deal with it.
Well, not to defend him, but then he hasn't lost the.
He hasn't lost a sword duel. No. He has lost a duel.
Yeah. Because I would say like that move would be a swordsman's biggest shame, you know?
I don't know. Live afterwards.
It doesn't matter.
Very hard to be ashamed when you're dead. Well, that's exactly it's a point of pride for Lucius, right? But even though Loken didn't fight it with like honor or with pride in the same sense, it still messed with Lucius. It still got in his head.
As you would imagine it would.
So the story for this guy really goes off the rails at the purging of the legions on Istvan III, right? So I actually found this amazing piece of artwork for it, which is really cool. The artist is someone called Lychee. It's L-Y-C-H-I-E. I have no idea where to find them. I will look it up. I will find somewhere we can find them. So I can't specifically say it. It was Lychee on ArtStation or Reddit or I don't know. I'll look it up. It'll be in the description. I'll hunt for it, okay?
Yes.
But it is truly incredible. I just want to make it as clear as possible. This is fantastic. But anyway, moving on. So, the purging of the legions at Istvan III is when our boy Lucius gets interesting and less of an arsehole, I guess. So, he was one of the loyalists that survived the burning of the planet, right? Because remember, the virus bombed the planet and some people got a warning. So they managed to survive. And you ended up with this, like, ground war between all of the traitors and, like, the 10% of their legions that was left alive that were loyalists. Just, like, dug in and fighting from foxholes, basically. He's one of them, right? And there's a few of them. So, like, him, Gavio Loken, is also one of the survivors. He ends up getting murdered by Abaddon. And his best friend, Saul Tarvitz, one of the other captains of the Emperor's Children. All are some of like the important traitor or loyalists that are fighting the traitors.
Yeah.
And it's important to explain that it's not a snap change for this guy, right? He is a loyalist fighting side by side with other loyalists. But gradually, as it seems to become more visible and more obvious that Saul Tarvitz, his best friend, is the one that is in charge. He's the one everyone's praising for leadership. Everyone's looking to for leadership in this battle and everything like that. It starts to like, it starts to taint Lucius. It starts to like, to I guess, to grudge him, like to grudge his success. And he starts to like turn on the loyalists, but on like a personal level. It's not like, oh, I suddenly hate the Emperor. It's, I suddenly fucking hate you guys. Like, I'm better at this than all of you. Why are you important? You know what I mean? It's that kind of thing. He just gradually, like, turns bitter to it and eventually decides to throw in his lot with the traitors. And when they find out he's, like, slaughtering a bunch of his own men, like, he's slaughtering a bunch of, like, other Emperor's Children Marines, and there's another loyalist, I believe it's Demeter, sees this and like runs over and helps him because he thinks he's fighting traitor marines that have gotten into their base. And it's only after he's killed them all, he's like, wait a minute, these are all loyalists. And Lucius is like, you're correct, stab.
Wrong place at the wrong time.
You picked the wrong side in that fight again. Stab.
Yep.
Yep. So he then obviously just joins the traitors and fucks over all his best friends and all the good guys. As is usually the way with traitor marines.
I mean, his name, Lucius, I'm just saying.
It does sound like a bad guy's name.
No, but just like in... No, never mind. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I feel like I'm missing a reference here.
Yeah, don't worry. Comment section, let him know.
I hope someone gets that, because I want to understand it.
It's fine, it's fine.
Yeah. Okay. So, after Lucius throws a tantrum and murders a bunch of his own guys and turns evil, the whole situation gradually resolves without Lucius being too important again. For the sake of his storyline, shortly after the whole Istvan III debacle, he is made to be Fulgrim's, like, leader of his bodyguard, right? So he becomes, like, the leader of Fulgrim's, like, actual personal guard because he's such a good warrior. And now is the time to recognize that, I guess? I don't know. There's weird reasoning behind it. But he also then, shortly after, becomes Lord Commander of the Legion. So he ends up running the Legion, which is quite weird. And it tends to get weirder. So remember how Fulgrim was possessed by a sword and trapped in a painting?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to forget how stupid that is.
Yeah, that was the whole thing.
Yeah, so Lucius starts having all these weird dreams that convince him that Fulgrim is possessed. So, in a brilliant move, you know what he does? What? He rounds up a bunch of the other like high-ranking members of the Legion, like Fabius and Eidolon and whoever else, and they kidnap Fulgrim.
Let's go. Because
he's convinced that he's possessed. So, after, like, many attempts at torture, which all failed, and many failed exorcisms, Lucius decides that actually Fulgrim was possessed, but Fulgrim's so great that he unpossessed himself. So everything's fine. We just kidnapped and tortured and exorcised our Primarch for no reason.
Great.
And everyone just moves on from that. It's fine. That has no lasting effect on anything.
Nope.
Weird situation, though. This guy's storyline is all over the place, man.
I can hear that, yeah.
Yeah. So, we go, you know, a bit further on, and do you remember from the Fulgrim episode in the last season that Fulgrim lied about having, like, heard rumors of some ridiculously powerful weapon that would turn the tide and, like, the traitors would instantly win? It was named the Angel Exterminatus.
Yeah?
Yeah. So, Lucius is one of Fulgrim's dudes that goes with him on this little, like, mission. And in the course of events, Lucius ends up locked in battle with one of the Raven Guard called Nykona Sharokin, right? He ends up locked in battle with him a couple of times. The first time, Lucius leaves with a scar. The second time, Lucius leaves with a scar, or with a matching scar, and two swords to the heart.
Damn.
Yeah, so Lucius just ends up getting impaled by this Raven Guard dude. He's just like, fuck you, best swordsman in the galaxy, my ass. Just impales the fucker. That's what you get. Take that, you traitorous bastard. And then Lucius wakes up on Fabius's operating table. Just amazed that he's alive. For the record, he was dead. Fabius brought him back from the dead. He does it a few times.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a trick of Fabius's to literally bring people back from the dead. He just somehow manages it once in a while. You're not the greatest apothecary in the galaxy until you can literally laugh at death. Just saying.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah.
I agree.
Fabius has died more times than he could count. but that's a discussion for another day. So he wakes up amazed that he's alive and decides that the only proper way to, you know, use his newfound life, you know, like this miracle's occurred, the only proper way to use it is to abandon everyone and everything you know and go hunting through the galaxy for rivals to fight.
Yeah.
So that's what he does. And he basically just ends up murdering a bunch of really good swordsmen and stuff like that, killing a bunch of like normal or just random space marines because they were apparently pretty good at what they did, and he was like, I'll check that. So he just goes around murdering people for a while. He basically just becomes a serial killer for like a couple of months. This like spree of random murders for no reason is only halted when he tries to murder one of the Thousand Sons, and at the end of the battle his like blade stops just short of killing the guy, and he's like, what the fuck's going on? It turns out Ahriman's just turned up and like stopped his sword with his powers and is like, mm-hmm. You can't kill him, I need him. It's like, I'm gonna need him soon, so you can't kill this guy yet. So then, as you might expect, Lucius just follows Ahriman around until he doesn't need him anymore so he can kill the guy.
Oh my god, that's menacing as well.
Just follows him around like a duckling till he can murder him. I like to think it was like a kid, you know, like that thing of like parents driving their children somewhere and the kids are in the back going, are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? I like to think of it as like, yeah, exactly, you get it. Armin's like trying to formulate some crazy mystical plan, and Lucy's like, can I kill him yet? Can I kill him yet? No, for the last time, sit down. I'll tell you when you can kill him. This whole Lucius storyline eventually culminates with Fulgrim being, you know, forcibly dragged to Terra for the siege, and then putting out a call to all the Emperor's children to come to Terra to, you know, kick some loyalist ass. And then Lucius rejoins and, you know, so on from there.
Yeah.
That is the main part of Lucius's storyline for the sake of what we wouldn't be covering going forward. Do you want to see what he looks like nowadays?
Yeah, go on.
I showed you him in the Halloween episode thing, because he's the most disgusting guy ever, and he looks like Nemesis from Resident Evil.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's some guy. Yeah. He's quite cool, though. Yeah. So that is kind of what you need to know about the Emperor's Children moving forward. Fabius is going around experimenting on stuff. Lucius is absolutely hell-bent on becoming the greatest swordsman in the galaxy and has or will murder anyone who claims otherwise, and is very, very blessed by Slaanesh at this point. But we'll get into the story of how that, you know, takes form when we're looking at this character individually and his whole, you know, nonsense storyline. And Emperor's Children otherwise, up until modern day, are kind of scattered nonsense. We'll expound on that when we get to incidents that require it. And Fulgrim, for all intents and purposes, is in Slaanesh's realm partying. Also, because I've covered every other character so far, pre and post heresy, do you want to see a picture of Fulgrim now?
Go on.
Look at this sexy bastard.
Oh, God.
It's him, him staring down Gilliman.
Yeah. Strutting around.
Yeah.
Like he owns the place.
This is actually by an artist called Mothman Draws, just so you know.
I like the name.
I love the idea of Mothman like trying to figure out how to, you know, work a pen properly as well. Or like, well, in this case, I assume this is purely digital art, so it'd probably be like a drawing tablet. I just love the idea of like, you know, Mothman's always like horror stories.
Yeah.
You know what Mothman is?
I'm not too sure. I thought that was just like a moth.
No, you know how like we have like Bigfoot and then like the Loch Ness Monster and all these things, all these like folk tales about mythical monster creatures. Yeah, there's one. I think it's in like the south of America. I don't know where, not South America, but the south of North America, I believe. But I think it's like one state in particular that has like Mothman as their one. And he's just this monstrous half moth, half man creature that goes around
Bruh.
doing monster stuff like it. I don't know. I don't know what it does. I've just heard about it a lot. It was in Fallout 76 as well, I think. I think
I
that,
mean,
or.
I like that kind of stuff, like Mojina and Loch Ness, and like you say, Bigfoot. But I've never heard about Mothman.
Oh
Hi.
yeah. You know what? We'll do like an extra episode at some point where we just look at Mothman.
If he
Areas of
responds to this
everything.
video, if he responds to this video, by the way.
If Mothman draws comments on this video for no apparent reason, we will do an episode covering the Mothman, as in the
All right, Ryan.
folktale.
You gotta put out a TikTok of that or shorts to, just for the reach, you know?
Oh yeah. I'll just reach out to Mothman draws. I'll see if they want to do.
Yeah, all right.
See if they care. They probably don't.
No.
I don't know how I do an episode of this about the Mothman. If I do that, I feel like we're rapidly going to go down a hill, which is going to end up with us doing true crime.
Right. No, it's gonna be my responsibility if we get that far. All right, you don't think
Oh
about it. It's
shit.
I'll see
Hell
you.
yeah, I'm into that. You know what? You know what we should do, right? We should start doing like stylized seasons. So like we should do one season at some point, like season eight, like 7 or 8 or something. That we do the whole thing as if it's like a Criminal Minds type thing, as if it's like a true crime podcast.
And then they arrived at the scene. Blood was everywhere because it's still 40K. Of course, blood is everywhere,
Yeah,
but gory.
it's like the first thing you say. Okay, moving forward, this is going to be a long story with many locations and many characters. Assume blood is everywhere in every situation, unless we state otherwise. That is the
And we don't state
standard.
otherwise. Yeah, we don't
Yeah, we
state
never actually
otherwise
state
ever.
otherwise.
Ever.
We do sometimes state that there are things in the blood. You know, we said there's blood everywhere? Yeah, there's blood everywhere, but this time there's bits of pancreas in there as well. It's really
Right.
important.
Okay. Yep.
Okay, moving on. Yeah, that's
Yes.
the Emperor's Children.
All right. Well, do you want me to round this up before we go on another tangent of like, you know what? I'll just take it here. Thank you guys for listening to this. Yeah, I don't know what this outro has been, but thank you guys for listening to this episode of Iterators of the Imperium podcast. It's been me, Mess, and Ryan, and we will see you at the next one. Take care and peace.
Bye.